So we've been studying the book of Exodus now. I think we're having a discrepancy at least 10 weeks. It's been a while, and we've made it to chapter 7, so we're doing relatively well. But today is the day that we're going to tackle what we've all been kind of looking. We've had lots of questions. We've been talking about, hey, what was the status of Pharaoh's heart? What was the whole deal with his heart? And so we're going to jump into that this morning and kind of look at this series called the Plague. So you've seen the movies. You kind of get a general idea of what's happening here. But let's read the passage. We'll start. If you have a Bible, I invite you to look it up, or a Bible app, which we're thinking we should call a BAP. That's what we're going to go with. If you have a BAP, go ahead and flick that or whatever you do. Exodus chapter 7, we're going to start there this morning. And we don't have time. We're not going to read this. We've taken a long time to get to Exodus chapter 7, but the next three chapters kind of deals with the plagues. And I read it. It takes a good 15 minutes or so to read it. So we're not going to go, we don't have time this morning to go through all of it. But I want to kind of give you some highlights of, or lowlights. I don't know how to look at this, but we kind of give you a brief overview of what's happening. Oh, thanks. I think I have one in my pocket too. Of what's happening. And then really, more importantly, want to ask, what does this all mean? What's God trying to say? Like, what is going on here in this really kind of difficult passage? So if you want to follow along, verse number 1 in Exodus chapter 7 says, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'See, I have made you like a god to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron will be your prophet. You are to say everything I command you, and your brother Aaron is to tell the Pharaoh to let the Israelites go out of his country. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in Egypt, he will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt, and with mighty acts of judgment, I will bring out my divisions, my people, the Israelites. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring the Israelites out of it." So let's talk about these plagues. I mean, God killed a lot of people, right? Aren't you glad you came to church today? Like, some of you are laying in bed this morning thinking, I don't know, should I go? I don't know. Like, congratulations. This, what a day to come. Like, we're going to talk about this. This is a passage of scripture that I think is, for a lot of people, really difficult, right? What in the world is going on with the plagues? And if you've seen the movies and you can see how Hollywood can make it look, just so grand and awesome and terrible. And I think the reality was probably even much worse than that. And so what does this all mean? I'm going to start with today. I know we were all kind of somewhat familiar, but without looking in your Bible and flipping through, can we just list the plagues? Can anyone want to take a shot? Someone to remember what one of the plagues were? Let's see if we can list them all. Anybody, how many were there, first of all? Anyone know? 10? Yeah. Well, Mike went to Bible college. Okay. Anyone remember? Just, it didn't have to be in order, but remember one of the plagues.
Frogs.
Frogs? Oh, yeah. Frogs, boils, locusts, oh man, blood, okay, what was that, what else, you guys are doing well, death of the firstborn, yeah, that's the last one, isn't it, death of first,
darkness,
yeah, I think that was 5 maybe, no, it wasn't 5. No cable? Are you kidding me? God, you've gone too far. Like, I tell you what it is right now. If God was doing the plagues here, I think it'd be like, especially these kids, it'd be like, all the batteries died on the iPads. Like, no cell phones. Oh my gosh, yeah. Anybody else want to take a stab at some of these?
Those flies, wouldn't it?
Flies, yeah. Huh? Boils, I think that's kind of, yeah. We got some of them? Livestock, yeah. Let's see, what have we forgotten? There's some more bugs. Gnats. We got locusts, gnats, locust, blood, gnats, frogs, flies, hail, yeah. Where are we? 1, 2, 3, 4. That was it? Dude, we rocked that. Make up a few more, right? We kicked that. So what's the point, right? Like, what is the point of all this brutality? Like, what is God trying to say? What is God trying to do? And it seems, think about it. Like, you come to this passage of scripture, and I think it's really important that we carefully read this, because I'm pretty convinced that this passage, the Exodus out of Egypt and then the conquest of the land, but I think that this passage of scripture is responsible for most of the brutality and violence that's ever been committed, all the atrocities that's been committed in the name of God throughout history. I think it stems from this, right? Because if this is what God is doing in the world, Right? If this is what God is like, and if this is what God's up to, I'm not so sure I'm down with that, right? I mean, I think a lot of us would be in that same place. We're like, if this is God, and so I think we need, as we approach this passage, we'll do what we talked about last week. What we began to learn is that when we read these passages, it's easy for us to begin to read them like modern Westerners, as we are. We read them through our lens, our understanding of the world. But it's important that we learn to read them as they were intended to be read, as ancient Middle Easterners. And we've said before that in their culture, in their world, they were much more interested in things like metaphor, things like narrative and symbols. And so, in other words, instead of, for them, it wasn't just about what happened, but the question really was, what did it all mean? What was God trying to say? Was there a message? Was there a greater purpose? Was there a picture that God was trying to paint for Pharaoh and for the Egyptians? And so we're going to try to look at these plagues today and see them maybe through the eyes of the narrative, through the eyes of story. And so I want to go back to Exodus chapter 7, where it kind of begins. And again, we don't have time to go through all of the plagues in detail. They're super interesting, and I kind of had plans of doing that. And we totally changed things last night to allow time to have a memorial this morning. But I want to kind of hit some of the big details of some of these, so we can get a sense of that maybe there's more to the story. So Exodus chapter 7, where you guys were, but we'll skip down to verse number 20. It says, Moses and Aaron did just as the Lord had commanded. He raised his staff in the presence of Pharaoh and his officials and struck the water of the Nile, and the water was changed into blood. The fish in the Nile died, and the river smelled so bad that the Egyptians could not drink its water. Blood was everywhere in Egypt. But the Egyptian magicians did the same things by their secret arts, and Pharaoh's heart became hard. He would not listen to Moses and Aaron, just as the Lord had said. Instead, he turned and went into his palace and did not even take this to heart. A couple of things about this first, this is the plague of blood. First, we were a little bit out of order, but plague of blood was first, and a couple things that really stand out to me. First of all, isn't it fascinating that the Egyptian magicians were able to do the same thing with however they did? And we don't know. Like historians still today debate, and theologians think, was it sleight of hand? Was it trickery? Was Moses trying to pull some big ruse? Or was this some actual miraculous intervention? We don't know. We don't know what's going on. But one thing we do know is I'm not sure it was super helpful the magicians to create more blood. You know what I mean? Like here they are. There was blood. Remember, it even says in verse, I don't know, whatever, there was blood everywhere throughout Egypt. And so the magicians are like, hey, more blood, like awesome. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of counterproductive to what, I think it would have been maybe a bit more helpful if they could have like turned the blood into water. But I think it's interesting that God allowed the Egyptian magicians to participate in what he was doing, but they couldn't stop it. I think it's interesting that even though these were people from a completely different worldview and they had thoughts, I'm sure, about the gods and their ideologies were radically different than the Hebrews, but God still allowed them to participate in what he was doing. They could create blood, but they couldn't stop it. I think that was interesting. Another thing in verse 23 where it says, Pharaoh did not even take this to heart. He turned and he went into his palace. It's almost like he was saying, God, I'm not ready to deal with this. He just says, I want to escape. I want to get away from this. And some of you have tried that. I've tried that. Where you feel like maybe God is saying something to you, or you have an inkling, and you're like, I don't even know. And rather than even investigating it and deciding, is this God? Is there a God? It's just sometimes it's easier to kind of retreat, right? It's kind of easy to pull back and to not ask the hard questions. Sometimes it's easier to say, you know what, I would rather just believe what I've always believed than to step into the unknown and really embrace this uncertainty. And we see this in Pharaoh here. He didn't want to deal with what was happening. And so he retreated into his palace. Now, the next plague, though, God's going to kind of, he's not going to let Pharaoh off the hook. In Exodus, in chapter 8, verse 3, this is the plague of frogs. And listen to what it says here. It says, Moses said that, and Moses and Aaron, they go to Pharaoh again. They're like, let my people go. And Pharaoh says, no. So there is this plague of frogs. But listen to what it says. It says, they will come up, these frogs, they covered the land of Egypt, it says, they will come up into your palace and your bedroom and onto your bed. So Pharaoh thinks, I'm going to retreat. I'm going to get away from this. Like, I'm just going to find my own little place to get away from it. But God says, no. This next plague is going to go even to those places. Even those, you felt that, haven't you? Those times where there's this gnawing, this nagging inside of your soul. Maybe you wouldn't even use that terminology, but there's something that's kind of haunting you and you can't escape it. And you try to occupy your mind with other things, and you listen to music and you read a book, but yet everything is bringing you right back to it. And then you see a road sign, you're like, a billboard, you're like, oh, and everything is kind of pointing you back to this thing. It's like, you can't escape it. And the frogs were everywhere. And even went to the places where Moses, or where Pharaoh was trying to escape. Now, here's what I think is also interesting about this, is that in ancient Egypt, frogs were considered sacred. They had many gods, a polytheistic society, but one of their main gods, I believe it was Nemet, was a frog god, and so frogs were considered sacred in Egypt, and they couldn't be killed. Right, so I think it's kind of brilliant on God's part a little bit, because essentially the Egyptian people were in a bind. Like there was all of these frogs everywhere. I mean, think about it. Slimy, wart-covered frogs everywhere in your bed, crawling all over you when you're trying to sleep, and they couldn't do anything about it. And essentially what happened is they began to loathe the very symbols of their worship. So you can see there's kind of a load, there's a message that's being packaged along with this. It wasn't like, oh, they're gonna be grossed out by these frogs, but God's trying to send a message about the to realign how they kind of perceive themselves and what they think about God in this world. I thought that was interesting. Also, the next plague is gnats. I thought this was interesting. The word gnats is not actually in the Hebrew. We get that from the Septuagint, which, as some of you know, is a Greek translation of the Hebrew. It says the plague was of gnats. But the Hebrew is unclear. Most historians say there was probably some sort of a sand flea or some sort of a biting fly, which that's pleasant. You know what I mean? Like, that sounds pretty awesome. But I also thought it was interesting that it was at this plague where Pharaoh's magicians just gave up. They're like, all right, we're out. Like, this was the first plague that the magicians couldn't reproduce by their own arts. And I'm kind of wondering, now the flies are, you know, frogs are kind of gross. It's an inconvenience. But biting fleas? You know what I mean? And so this was the first plague that was starting to be a nuisance, at least, and really to start to harm people. I think it was interesting that God said, listen, I'm not going to let you participate in that. Like, he stopped the magicians from being able to reproduce this there. I like that even the magicians at this point says, hey, this is the finger of God. If you read it, their hearts are now being transformed. They're starting to see that maybe there's more to this. So they tell Pharaoh, they're like, hey, as your advisors, we want you to know this is the finger of God, which I'm kind of like, you have one of those, you think, you know, I mean, you kind of have one of those dumb moments. They weren't really ready to probably open their soul completely, but at least there's a little crack, and they're like, man, I think God might be doing something here, Pharaoh. And then the next one was the plague of flies. In the Hebrew, it says the plague of swarms. So it doesn't specifically say flies. A lot of historians say it was probably just every insect that was native to Egypt, just beginning to create these humongous swarms. So like, imagine Amanda in a setting like this, where just bugs and bees and wasps and everything just swarming everywhere. She's out, right? Like, she's not like, we won last. We the first death by the plagues right there. But what was also interesting is this is the first plague where the scriptures actually says specifically that God spares the Hebrew people in the land of Goshen. And in this plague and really all the rest of the plagues that happened were only in Egypt and in localized where they lived and not in the land of Goshen where the Hebrew people lived. And so the next plague was the plague of livestock, which in this world where wealth was primarily attached to your livestock and what you owned, this would have been like an unparalleled economic disaster. So it's not just about the livestock, but this is about now a financial issue. Then the next plague is the plague of boils. So now the plagues are starting to affect humans. And you can kind of see there's this escalation, isn't there? The plague of boils. And what I found really interesting and fascinating about this one is the text says that Moses took some ash and he threw it up in the air. And then there were these infected, like, you know, weeping sores that came on and covered the people. And but again, historians tell us that the ash that Moses would have used would have most likely have been taken from one of the kilns that the Hebrew people would have used to bake bricks all day, every day, as slaves. That he would have taken some of the ash from these kilns. And so there was a great symbolism. Like, you could kind of get an idea here of what God thinks about the oppression, about injustice, about slavery, about using another person to achieve your own ends in this world. I think it's a pretty clear message. And then the plagues continue, right? The plague of hail. It's the first plague that results in death. And what I think is interesting, this one in verse, did I give you verse 19? Exodus 9, verse 19? Listen to what God says. God warns them. He says, listen, give an order now to bring your livestock and everything you have in the field to a place of shelter, because the hail will fall on every person and animal that has not been brought in and still out in the field, and they will die. And I kind of thought it was interesting that even though God's bringing this plague, you can see him almost pleading with the Egyptians and with Pharaoh to say, listen, bring your people in. Don't let this happen. Don't let this happen. And there's the plague of locusts, the plague of darkness. It was interesting. The text says it's a darkness that could be felt. I don't know if that was metaphorical or if it was literally some sort of a darkness, but I think we've all been in those moments where it just felt so dark and felt so bleak and things felt so hopeless that it affected you, right? And that's what they're experiencing. They're experiencing this deep darkness. And at the end of all this, you know, there's, of course, the play, the death of the firstborn. We've talked about that several times with it. We celebrate the Passover together. We've talked about that plague. It's sad, but more than just sad, it's infuriating. And I love in Exodus chapter 11, verse 8, it says, then Moses, I'm reading this in the Voice translation, by the way, says, then Moses, who was boiling with anger, left Pharaoh's presence. How's it say in the, I don't know if I gave you the voice, but it says he was boiling with anger. He was so angry with Pharaoh that after all of this, and this was actually before the last plague, the death of the firstborn, there was inside of Moses, this rose up, more than a frustration. Some of you have felt that, where there are people who, due to their own choices, people that you may have loved, people that you've been invested in their lives, yet they continue to make decisions that are wreaking havoc in their world and in their life and in their future. And sometimes it feels, don't you just get that feeling where you're just get so frustrated? That even after all this, Pharaoh would not relent. That Pharaoh was dead set that he is in charge, that he was God. He was God. So Moses, you can see, he's just so frustrated. But you know what? We knew all along, Moses should have known all along. God knew all along that Pharaoh was not going to remember. Remember what it says in chapter 7. We read this earlier, verse 23 of chapter 7. It says, instead, he, talking about Pharaoh, turned and he went into his palace and he did not take even this to heart. I think we got to talk about Pharaoh's heart. Like, what is up with Pharaoh's heart? We didn't read all the passages for the sake of time this morning, but in every one of these plagues, over and over again, it brings our attention back to Pharaoh's heart. It keeps coming back to the condition of Pharaoh's heart. Now, in the Bible, in various places, but specifically here in this story of Pharaoh, the Bible talks about God having an influence in hardening the heart of people. Specifically here, time and time again, it will say something along the lines that God hardens Pharaoh's heart. Apparently, and on the surface, it kind of looks like, what's God doing? Is God stripping, like, free moral agents, stripping them of their ability to have free will, and then judging them for decisions that they couldn't not make? I mean, it's kind of confusing, and it brings up a lot of questions. I think there's a lot of things there are a lot of problems with this. Number one, you got to ask, why would God do that, right? Like, why would God harden someone's heart so that they maybe couldn't make a different decision? So why would God even do that? Number two, if God did do that, how could God then hold a hardened agent, a hardened heart, responsible for the choices that they made with a heart that they couldn't, that was inflexible and they couldn't change? Like, how could they then be held responsible for the choices at that point? I think another question would be, like, why would God ever prevent someone from repenting? Why did he not allow Pharaoh to change course through this time? How can a good God be responsible for evil? We've talked about that lots of times, right? How can a good God, a God who claims to be good, a God who says, I am good, then be responsible for creating so much pain, suffering, and evil in the world? So I want to take a closer look, because this is really interesting. And again, I asked various people, and a lot more knowledge than I'll just be honest, a lot more knowledge than I. Why is these passages translated like that? Because there's some really interesting things that's happening in the story. So I want to take a closer look. First of all, in all of these plagues, there is some reference to Pharaoh's heart, as I mentioned. But in the first five plagues, we've got them out of order here. But in the first five plagues, it says something along the lines of Pharaoh hardened his heart, or it says that Pharaoh's heart was hardened, but there's no indication that God did anything at all in the first five plagues. There's kind of a mixture. I think there's three and two, but three of the plagues, Pharaoh hardens his own heart. A couple of the first five plagues, it just says, hey, Pharaoh's heart was hard. He didn't respond. Moses went to him, but Pharaoh's heart was hard. Now, in all of these first five plagues, the Hebrew word that is used here is kaved, which is a Hebrew word that it's most closely related to the word for heavy, but there's a lot of words here. And as you guys know, there's no vowels in Hebrew, and so it's the consonants are the same, and it means heavy. But depending on how it was pronounced with the different vowel sounds, would kind of change what the word means. And so kaved, with a A sound in it like that, was a word that was most often used to mean stubborn or dense or thick. Again, you can see in their world, not like a modern day understanding of physics. For them, something that was heavy was hard, and you know, feathers are light and they're soft. And so they had this correlation that something that was conveyed, it was heavy, and it had this sense of being stubborn or being very, very dense. So that's the word that was used in the first. Pharaoh's heart was stubborn. He just wasn't, it was inflexible. He had his heart that wasn't being shaped by the current events. Even though these things were happening, Pharaoh, and it says, some of it, it says Pharaoh hardened, Pharaoh conveyed his own heart. He made his own heart stubborn. Other times it just reports, man, his heart is conveyed. But the last five plagues, there's a totally different word. Now in English, it's still translated as heavy. It creates a lot of confusion. But in the Hebrew, in the last five plagues, it's a completely different word that is still translated as is heavy, but it's chazak. You have to do that. You have to get that like a clear throat. Chazak. And chazak is the same word when God tells Joshua to be strong and courageous. In that passage, God tells Joshua, says, have a chazak heart. Like, have your heart be strong or heavy, or it's most often translated as courageous in these other passages. So when the Bible here is talking about, it says God hardens Pharaoh's heart, it really means in the first few, Pharaoh made his own heart stubborn. But in these last one, it says God, another word would be translated, you could say God strengthened Pharaoh's heart, or God gave his heart some resolve. He steeled Pharaoh's resolve to stand his ground. In other words, God is, what I think is fascinating is God is actually not overriding Pharaoh's will, free will. God is preserving Pharaoh's free will. That at this point in the story, Moses is kind of clueless, doesn't know what's going on, but God sees into the status of Pharaoh's heart and says, listen, Pharaoh has made his decision. Pharaoh has made up his mind, and I'm not going to use these plagues to coerce a confession out of him. I'm not willing to use power or to use might in order to enforce my will on Pharaoh. Like, I think we misread these plagues to kind of justify that sometimes violence can be a reasonable means to get somebody else to kind of go along with your way. And if they disagree with you, then you just use power to overthrow them. But God's saying, listen, I'm doing the exact opposite of this. I want to take Pharaoh's heart, and I want to honor his free will. And rather than having these plagues come in, and now all of a sudden he's like, okay, I capitulate, I give up, like, I'll serve you now, God. God says, listen, I'm going to give your heart the courage, the strength, to even in spite of all of these circumstances, to be who you've decided to be, Pharaoh. And he honored Pharaoh's free will. In other words, I think God respected Pharaoh's choice. And we really see this from the beginning of the story. Way back in Exodus chapter 3, we touched on this passage, but we just skipped over it. But in verse 19, here's what God says. He says, I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go. I know this. He even says, unless a mighty hand compels him, I know he's not going to let you go. He's not going to do it because of his heart. He's not going to just make a decision one day to do what's right. I know that this is going to happen. So clearly, Pharaoh is not a person who is, it's not like he's a repentant sinner that wants to find grace and mercy, but God is refusing to allow him to experience it. Pharaoh is a proud and determined tyrant who's hell-bent on evil. And God simply says, listen, I'm telling a story and I'm making a point, but I'm not going to coerce you, Pharaoh. I'll give you the resolve that you can stand your ground even in spite of all of these circumstances. And if you want to stand firm where you are, then so be it. See, what I think is so fascinating about this story is that ultimately the story of the plagues really aren't about the plagues at all. This is a story about Pharaoh's heart. 20 different times in these chapters, in chapter 7 through chapter 10, the text mentions the state, the condition of Pharaoh's heart 20 times. That's more, the discussion about Pharaoh's heart happens more, it talks about that more than the word plague. It's used, the word for Pharaoh's heart is talked about more than the word for sin, more than the word for slavery, more than let my people go, more than mentions of, you know, the rod of God, Moses' staff of power. Like, more than anything else in the story, this is a story about the condition of Pharaoh's heart. So this is a story, here's the point. God wasn't trying to subvert Pharaoh's will. God was trying to transform his heart. This whole story is a story of God saying, listen, I want to reveal to you who you really are. I want to give you a window into who you've become. I want you to see this, the state of your own soul. And I think sometimes we read this as if God was trying to flex his muscle and he was trying to humiliate or trying to retaliate and bring a sinner to his knees. But this isn't what God was doing at all. See, Exodus turns out not to be a story about a plagued land. It's a story about a plagued heart. but the heart of a man who'd become so cold and so distant and so broken and so dysfunctional that even God said, I can't sway you from that. And he wrote just havoc. A wake of destruction was left in the path of this man's, Pharaoh's, life. And I think what's so beautiful about this story is that, God went to tremendous lengths to deliver his people from slavery, to stand for against oppression, to stand up against injustice, to say this must stop. He went to tremendous lengths to accomplish this mission, but he went even further to see Pharaoh's heart transformed, to see Pharaoh's heart radically remade and recreated. This is ultimately a story about the condition of Pharaoh's heart. And so as we end this morning, I just want to ask you, have you looked inside? Like, what is the condition of your heart? And guys, you guys can go ahead and come up. I know it's shorter when we normally talk, but what's the condition of your heart? And because I'm telling you, the current events, I can make anyone bitter. And it'd be so easy to have fear. That would become kind of our normal mode of operating. It'd be so easy to have just kind of distrust be the way that we move and walk in the world. You see another suspicion. It could easily become what kind of guides our hearts. What's the condition of your soul? Because if we're people who we believe who are called to live by faith, be known by love, and be a voice of hope, if we're trying to be people of grace and peace, and gentleness, mercy, we need to sometimes step back and say, wait a minute, is this who I'm becoming? In light of what's going on in the world, maybe it's not even, I mean, maybe in your world, it's what happened this last week was nothing compared to what you've been going through with home, with the kids, with marriage, with family. Things at work have been just, and it's just kind of resulted in you. You kind of have this residual bitterness, maybe apathy. See, what I think is so insightful, what's been rocking my world this week as I've been praying and thinking, is that Pharaoh's choices damaged his own soul. I think this is a story about the damage that we can do to our own soul through how we live. Like bitterness, that's damage that we do to our own, who we are. It damages us. Unforgiveness, apathy, begin to damage our own soul. And pretty soon we become a person, we walk in with this bitterness and we can justify it because we have all these events and it makes perfect sense. And if you sat down with Pharaoh, he'd probably give you a long list of reasons why from his worldview it made perfect sense to be who he was. But here's the reality. Reality was is he was cold and hard-hearted and unwilling to allow God to come in and bring peace, love, hope, grace to his heart. I think Exodus reveals that underneath it all, what we have is a heart problem. It's not a political problem. Like, what's wrong with the world today? I mean, I'm not against using any means necessary to combat injustice and stand for those who cannot stand for themselves, but ultimately, this is not a political problem. I think God recognized here, this was not a political solution to a slavery. This was a heart problem, and it required heart transformation. Racism is a heart problem. Violence is a heart problem. Hatred is a heart problem. And we live in a world where we're suspicious every moment. We never feel that we're safe and at home. We never really feel like we can rest. And when we're always on edge, that's not just a culture problem. That's not a world. That's a heart problem. This is how I've chosen to live my life in this world. And God says, I've come and I want to deliver you from that. See, God was trying to get his people out of that world. They lived in that constant oppression and even the oppression that they brought on themselves. I want to end with this last passage of scripture. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 7, hundreds of years later in the New Testament, as the writers reflect upon this story, listen to what they say. Verse number 7, so as the Holy Spirit says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. If you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. He goes on to say, do not harden your hearts as you did in the rebellion during the time of the testing in the wilderness. Skip on to verse number 12. See to it, brothers and sisters, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God, but encourage one another. Encourage one another as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Let me just take a moment of just reflection, meditation. I just ask if you close your eyes, if you feel comfortable. If not, it's okay, but just we'll do the awkward eye contact. But the rest of you, just close your eyes and just, what's the status of your heart? What's in there? Is there something that's just been gnawing at you? And has it been just easy for you to dismiss? It didn't fit your worldview. It was kind of outside the way that you've grown comfortable and understanding the world. It was kind of challenging some of the fundamental presuppositions that help you understand who you are and where you belong in this world. And there's something that's just been kind of like gnawing at you, and it's breaking those things down. And maybe today is God just says, hey, will you soften your heart? Will you allow me to speak to you? Will you allow me to love you? Will you allow me to forgive you? Now, maybe you don't feel like you're ready to forgive yourself, but maybe would you just open your heart enough to allow God to say, I forgive you.